so begin.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-holy race?
I see a great hand reaching out of the stars.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
Weapons
and supplies. That's why people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watches.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city of flames.
Giants in the playground.
Get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 6, Chatsalon 5. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by my love, the brightest star in my sky. Good night, you who are my sky and my sun and my moon. Oh. It's Magellan, everyone.
Oh, boy. Let's hug the way they hugged.
How did they hug in the thing?
They just hugged.
Okay.
It's just a hug.
We're standing up, folks. Scared out of my mind.
Yeah, Mira Furlan plays terrified and ready for her husband to die in the same exact way.
Yeah, that's her best emotion. It's scared.
This is a Babylon 5 podcast, everybody.
Hey.
It's a TV podcast where we watch Babylon 5. I'm here with Magellan live from sunny... Someone always comes up with one and I can't come up with one. And I'm the host. Can you... Any
Tuscaloosa.
City? Wait, where is that?
I don't know.
Oklahoma?
I don't know.
Tulsa, Oklahoma. Timely.
Well, I do Tulsa a lot. I think I've done Tulsa.
You've done
before.
Tulsa?
Yep.
Did you ever hear about the Black Wall Street thing?
Lincoln, Nebraska.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know about Black Wall Street, dude.
Okay. I'm a history teacher,
Come
yeah.
on now. Thank you.
What did we? Hey, welcome to a podcast hosted by a history teacher and a dork.
They're both the same guy?
Yeah, weird. Yeah. It's Chatsalon 5. We're watching Babylon 5. This week, we did a big thing, folks. We finished Babylon 5.
Yeah, it's our last time watching two episodes a week of Babylon 5.
That's correct. Ever. For the first time. Because we could rewatch like two episodes of Babylon 5
if we felt like it, just for fun.
Yeah, for fun. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're talking about them. And this week, we watched Season 5, Episode 21, Objects at Rest. We also watched the series finale of Babylon 5, Season 5, Episode 22, Sleeping in Light. First up is Objects at Rest, which was written by J. Michael Straczynski. It was directed by John Copeland. It aired November 18th, 1998, and it takes place from September 6th to September 11th, 2262. But John, what happened in Objects at Rest?
That's the last time we get 2262, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
R.I.P. In this episode, the changing of the guard completes as Sheridan and Delenn leave the station for the new ISA headquarters on Minbar. Their journey to their new home, as well as their arrival, however, are tarnished with ill omen.
How did you feel about this episode?
You know, there are a lot of endings in Babylon 5, and we're talking about two more of them today. Mm-hmm. We talked about a handful of them last week and a handful in Season 4. And I think on chats, we always talk about this question of, like, if you were to start someone at a random episode.
Yeah. Where would it be?
Where would it be? Episode? And, like, which episodes do they watch or not watch?
Mm-hmm.
And now the question that I'm thinking about with Babylon 5 is, if you were to end someone on Babylon 5, where would you end them?
Right.
And that is a very hard question to answer. It's not Objects at Rest, but Objects at Rest has some, it ties up some things and foretells some things that I think are entirely useful as a second to last episode. But it was like a bummer. It was a real bummer of an episode.
But both of these episodes have aspects of them that are sad.
Yeah.
But it's like different types of endings.
Right. Well, because the second, we'll talk about Sleeping in Light a lot, but the second one is sad in a sort of like endings are sad and goodbyes are sad kind
naturally,
of way.
Naturally, yeah.
This one is sad in like the world is still going to have evil in it.
Yeah, totally.
It's like.
And there's like a dull acceptance to that.
Yeah.
Like a numb acceptance to it, I mean.
Yeah. So I don't know where, I guess we start at the beginning of the episode because this is a pretty self-contained moment.
Yeah.
Basically, a lot of Objects at Rest is about, like it said in the description, the changing of the guard. And the first moment that we have is
Sheridan Lockley.
Oh, Sheridan Lockley. Oh, I was thinking of after that. Oh, yeah, they talk on the bridge or whatever. It's fine.
She's like, I've been here for a whole year. He's like, you're barely a character. Yeah. Pretty much.
I didn't have any attachment to the Sheridan Lockley passing of the baton thing. It was fine. It's still so weird that they were married, and I can't get past that.
Right. He's being like, it's been such an amazing time with you, and I really appreciate you. My ex-wife. I was like yelling at the TV when we were watching. Yeah. I'm like, say it.
Yeah.
They refused to acknowledge. Oh, I really ruined the microphone there.
You peaked the mic. That was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't very often imagined what would it be like if in this scene, instead of Lockley, it was Ivanova.
Yeah.
But in this episode, that's where you really feel the absence of Ivanova. And the moments between Sheridan and Lockley, if it had been Ivanova, would have been so much better. Like at the end, where he's like, turn the ship around, let's take a peek inside.
Yeah.
And they look in Babylon 5 and everyone's on the bridge and she salutes him.
Yeah.
And he salutes back. If that was Ivanova, dude.
Oh my God. My
God, that would be great. But when it's Lockley, it's like, hold on, Delenn. Let me salute my ex-wife real quick and say goodbye. And then it makes it weird that she's the only one saluting. It's so.
So, because that shot reminds me.
I didn't like it.
We watched. As is appropriate, after we finished Sleeping Light, we watched a little bit of the first episode.
Yeah.
What's the first episode called again?
Oh, I don't know.
The season one, episode one. Not The Gathering, but season one, episode one.
I'm just kidding.
That's just a good name, though.
Yeah.
And I forgot that in the original theme song, they had, like, Garibaldi, Ivanova, and Sinclair, like, looking out the window. And yeah, so I feel like it was
echoing that shot.
Yeah, but it's, like, with a character we don't care about. So I'm like...
Yeah.
Or we barely know. Like, Lockley is just this weird... like thing that's in season five that's like,
yeah,
okay, yeah, she is here and she's a cast member and she's, you know, Tracy Scoggins is like pretty good, but like,
yeah, like if we'd had her for a little bit longer, if she'd been a character in seasons 4 and 5 or something, mm-hmm. then I think we would have felt more attachment to her. But because all of season 5, and we'll talk about this when we talk about Sleeping in Light, but I wish, I don't really care, but I wonder what our experience would have been like if we didn't know that Sleeping in Light was produced after season 4.
Yeah.
Because it made everything in season 5, knowing that, feel like it was filling in the cracks between the show we had and the ending it was supposed to have. And everything else was like, hey, here's some nice stuff that you can enjoy that's Babylon 5 and the stuff matters. But ultimately nothing exceptionally new is introduced in season 5 that like fundamentally changes the nature of the world. And Lockley is a character I think is really emblematic of that, because like, since we don't see her in Sleeping in Light as like, I'm still here on Babylon 5, it's like, okay, yeah,
you just left.
Yeah, so her goodbye is like, salute, see ya,
bye.
I'm, and it's fine. I mean, what other goodbye could we have? I think the best goodbye for her is River of Souls.
Yeah, that's easily her best performance, her best episode, like quote-unquote episode, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also moments in that, in and I feel like we're just talking about Sleeping Light now, but we can get back to Objects at Rest for sure, because there's a lot of good stuff in this episode. But a lot of stuff feels like it makes Sleeping in Light worse because we've watched so much more B5.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm starting to think of, like, oh, could we have watched it, like, finished season 4,
then Sleeping Night, then season 5? Yeah, let's answer that question when we talk about Sleeping
Sure.
Night. Yeah.
But Objects at Rest basically wraps up some stuff that we saw in Objects in Motion in the last couple episodes. One of the scenes I really like that is upcoming up next is we see the message that Jakar left before he left the station with Leeta, which is that he left a message for T'Lan, basically being like, I need to go. Our people do still need a leader, though. They can't just lead themselves. I'm handing you this torch.
Yeah.
And the guy who plays T'Lan is so good. He's so good.
Yeah.
Great to see him. Great to see him bringing his sword back on the station.
That's
everything.
One of those performances that, like, if you were to add the sum total of screen time that T'Lan has received, it's probably like a half an hour tops.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or maybe more than that, but certainly no longer than the span of a single episode has this guy been seen and talking in Babylon 5. And he's a big character to us.
Yeah.
Like the fact that Jakar is giving it, when we see T'Lan at the door and Veer's like, he's not there anymore, we know what this means to T'Lan. We know what the passing of the torch means to him. We know already that he's someone who would be reprehensive of receiving that honor, which is what makes him perfect to do it. Because Jakar has that moment in the recording where he's like, now, the reason that you would say yes to this, I don't know. You got to figure that out for yourself.
Can't tell you that.
But yeah, I thought that this was a really nice... This was an example. There are many examples of like, okay, now it's your turn in this episode.
Yeah, that's like this whole episode
probably,
is that.
I thought this was probably the best of those.
Yes.
Or the one that felt the most significant. I did think it was cheesy without emotional impact, how they took... Jakar was doing the recording, and then they did a shot of Jakar standing next to T'Lan.
Yeah.
Which was supposed to...
Like, it's supposed to be him recording it, looking at the screen.
Yeah, which was an interesting idea, but because Babylon 5 never does things like that, it just felt really jarring.
Yeah.
I think in other shows that play with their cinematography and their staging more, they could have done that and it would have worked.
Mm-hmm.
But because Babylon 5, it's always so grounded in, like, how it presents things to us, that was like, ooh, this is goofy. I'm noticing this.
This is very silly.
I'm noticing this, and I shouldn't be. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the choice. It's just a weird choice. And then he ends it with the line, serve our people reasonably, fairly, and with honor. The rest will tend to itself. Like, kind of, what I love about this final moment for Jakar is that he's like, I tried ruling my people. I tried, like, guiding them, and they misunderstood everything I said. Yeah. I tried letting them fend for themselves. They misinterpreted my message, and they made a mess of things. Somebody needs to lead them. Somebody else needs to lead them. Some new guard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, here you go, T'Lan, this is your job. It works.
Yeah.
Like, when we see the Narn, they were often my favorite race just to watch interact with each other, because they're like, politicking is so interesting, but T'Lan is like the clean answer of like, who do you pass on the Narn legacy to? Like,
yeah, because the Narn have such a warrior culture to them.
Yeah.
And a power culture. I don't remember exactly the line. It's kind of a long line of Jakar saying, like, here's what I had, here's what I didn't have. I think one of the things he says is that he didn't have the power to lead or something. I don't know.
I think that's one of the words. It's like what the adjective is, I'm not sure of, but yeah, you have that.
Yeah. But the thing that's cool about T'Lan and makes him perfect for the Narn is that he's a guy who could kill you real good.
Yeah.
But he almost always leaves his sword in its sheath. And that's what the Narn need right now more than Jesus is. They need their, like, their wise warrior king, because it's sad to see Jakar accept the fact that, like, he became the best dude ever and he did everything he could, but he failed to lead the Narn out of their darkness.
Yeah.
And he has this acceptance of that is, again, like, sad. It's a sad,
big time,
bleak part of this episode, that kind of enlightenment, even for an individual, doesn't necessarily redeem the society.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
This evil or this inherent selfishness or inherent distrust of others is always going to exist in any sentient society. That is something that Babylon 5, I think from the very beginning, it's what it's been all about. That we can't escape. You can call it evil, or you can whatever you want to call it. We can't escape the mistakes that we make.
Yeah.
And our darker impulses. It's a thing that JMS said about what made Babylon 5 different from Star Trek, right? I think you read it a while ago on a past episode. That his conception of Babylon 5 was Star Trek was a world where in order to go into space, we had to leave behind our
like
sins.
Biases and our evils, and
but he was saying, like, no, when we go into space, that all sticks
that
with
shit
us,
comes with us
who we are.
Yeah.
And it's real, it's realistic.
But
it's also like, oh.
See, this is definitely like an emotionally draining episode, because there's just so much of like people saying to each other, well, we tried, and I guess we're better now, and things will probably happen again, but we're gonna keep trying.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the plot lines work in that sort of like open-ended finale way, and then some of them, like the Sheridan's son stuff, is like, it just feels like this is not how an ending works. This is not how like stories write endings. But this stuff definitely is like, okay, because again, when we watched the first episode of the series again, seeing Jakar be like, I'm gonna destroy you, Malari, and like being all smiley and giggly, and like they'd like choke each other out in the Zocalo, and you're like, oh my god, like, he's grown so much.
Right.
He's such a big boy now.
Yeah.
Also, his makeup got better. Like, much better.
Yeah.
So the growth there is really great. And then speaking of like not as good sort of conclusions, we get Franklin passing his torch. Interestingly, though, before we talk about how much we didn't like this scene, because we didn't love this scene, the woman he hands it to is Dr. Hobbs, who was like, I believe the woman in like season one or two who was like doubting him a lot in like the medical episodes.
Oh, yeah. And he was like, you're wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Interludes and examination. Sorry. I'm looking at the episode that, that Dr. Hobbs was in.
Interludes when he was about... like on his drug bender, he was yelling at her.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is the thing about this passing the torch, Franklin to Dr. Hobbs, is I did not remember who she was.
I seriously thought it was a new character. I'm like, whoa.
I thought for a second it was like the daughter of the old lady who had the machine that could heal people.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah.
But that's obviously not who that is. This scene just didn't hit because it's Franklin being like, all right, now it's your turn. And we're like, what? And then at the end, that the pan across the new squad.
Here's everyone. Five,
it ends on her, who's like the person we know the least. It goes through Zach Allen. It goes through Lockley. It goes through Talon. It goes through Veer. And then it ends up on Dr. Hobbs. And, like, and we're like, who are you?
Literally, whose woman's is this?
Yeah.
It's quite awkward. I think... I don't want to say Franklin gets a short shrift because he's really fun in Sleeping in Light, but in this episode, it's just like...
Well, he's always gotten that throughout the whole show. Like, he's the main cast member who's gotten the least, except for season one, Talia Winters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But I think Franklin has consistently been the... Maybe not underused. Maybe other people were overused. I don't know. But
whatever you want to call that.
Has gotten less to do and less to be over the course of his.
And it's more, it's also because I love every time we get him. Not just because he's like one of my favorite characters, but when we do
Richard
get him.
Biggs is great. He's a really engaging performer.
When we got him with Marcus, he was great. With Garibaldi, he was great. Like he's had great, great moments with everybody. But this moment is just like, it's just reminding us like we never really like put, we never really truly felt like he was in the main.
Yeah,
main
we
cast.
Didn't invest in like a squad for him.
Yeah.
The way that. A lot of the other main characters have this constellation of side characters that are in their world, you know, like Jakar had, he had Talon, he had Natath, he had, maybe that's all that Jakar had and he didn't have a ton, but Jakar got a lot to do. Londo has a whole world of weird Centauri dudes that he's hanging out with.
Yeah.
Delenn has...
Lanier and Sheridan and Alderman Bari.
Dukat and what's his face? Nerun.
Nerun, yeah.
And then Sheridan's got, you know, other stuff too.
The whole crew, pretty much.
But Franklin, it's like, who does Franklin have? I guess Dr. Hobbs. And then this, like, sort of rogues gallery of one off characters who are in his medical episodes. But not people who we have invested in over the course of the show.
I think I might have mentioned this way back in season one. This is all beginnings always hide themselves at ends, right? I don't think we necessarily, like, this is not, it's an ensemble show, but it's not a show where we need everyone to constantly be hanging out.
Right.
Like,
and we don't need everyone to be have equal screen time.
True. Because realistically, like, he's the doctor.
Right.
Like, he's not going to carry PPG around. He's not going to, like, make political decisions. Even the fact that he was on, like, the Conspiracy of Light or whatever...
was weird to us.
Was, like, a little weird. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess you guys brought the Doctor on. Like, he's main cast because they decided that, like, having... And they were right in thinking, like, seeing what the Doctor thinks on this is important to the series, which I agree with. But it doesn't need to be, like, everyone gets equal screen time. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, but it just felt like we could have... developed the world of Medbay a little bit more.
Yeah,
because like I don't know that I learned, I didn't learn her name, Dr. Hobbs.
I had to look at the wiki to see that. Yeah. I would take a like Medbay sideshow, like one season sideshow. And that's what's the show with Dr. Fraser Crane? Fraser. That guy with the classic Fraser guy.
When I was listening back to Chatsalon 5, our season one coverage, you had a lot of angst over not seeing Dr. Franklin enough. That was like a constant drum.
Yeah, yeah. And we got so much more of him, but still, I could always use more Franklin.
Yeah.
Agreed. Lanier comes onto the ship and brings with him a conflict that we didn't expect in this, like, midnight hour.
Oh, my God, dude.
He's on vacation. He's on holiday.
Oh, my God.
He uses yet another holiday to visit this woman who has multiple times told him, it's not happening, bud. This ain't it, Chief.
Yeah.
But still, definitely hit me up when you want to have a fun time.
Right. Right.
This is literally a scene where he's like, I'm fine, everything's fine. And she's like, yeah. And then she picks up a photo of her and Sheridan. No,
he picks it up. Like, let me go look to pack other things.
Get you a drink or something, yeah.
Yeah, and on top of her box is like a framed photo, which I didn't realize they had in space still.
Yeah.
These like old fashioned frame photos of her and Sheridan. He's just staring at it to remind us, the audience, oh, he has a crush on Delenn, in case you forgot. And in that moment, or in this scene, I was like, I made a joke about, he's like, oh, Delenn, sorry, I had to come by because I remembered I have to betray the Rangers
before
the season ends.
Forgot.
I forgot about the prophecy.
Wow, some of this stuff totally felt like he was like, ooh, got it. It really did feel like, ooh, I have to do a thing.
Yeah.
Because I really thought he was over it.
Yeah, same.
Before we get there.
Yeah.
We briefly have a moment where everyone's talking about like, oh, Garibaldi left. Zach Allen's running the thing now. Lockley's here now. Yeah. Tessa's here now. This is great. And then Zach's like, I wonder what Garibaldi's doing these days. And that was when I was like, I really want them to like cut to him either like face down in a bar or like having sex or something like really ridiculous. And it was just like, oh yeah, he's a CEO ass CEO now.
Yeah.
Garibaldi runs the Edgar's Industries pretty much, or he like co-runs it with Lise. He's the new board of directors, and I loved this scene. This was like such a good Garibaldi moment where he's like, here's my new board of directors. You guys all got fucked up. You're all idiots. You all worked here for a year and you're never going to get promoted because you're troublemakers and you've lied a lot and nobody trusts you here.
Yeah.
That's why you're getting promoted.
it's not his new board. Well, maybe it is actually. Does it say it's the whole new board of directors?
He's introducing himself to the new board of directors at Edgar's Industries.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought that the existing board still was like under his thumb because he had all that blackmail on them.
I think a bunch of them quit as a result of that. I would imagine.
Okay, that makes sense. That scene was delightful. That's where you want to see Garibaldi end up.
Because he's like, he's the troublemakers, and the reason I hired you is because you guys will keep me in check. If I'm stupid, if I'm wrong, you tell me.
Yeah. I don't. Nothing to lose. I didn't love seeing him in Sleeping in Light as like a cigar twirling capitalist.
Yeah,
Little gross, but this.
It's
this
the ending he was going to get. He was going to become that guy. Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk about the debriefing scene real quick. Just. I think when I when we initially saw number one, what's her name?
Tessa.
When we initially saw Tessa, I wasn't crazy about her performance.
Mm-hmm.
I think in like emotionally exaggerated moments, I don't always buy her.
Yes.
But it was so fun and felt really good to see her in this scene debriefing Sheridan on like whatever weird thing is going on. I thought she played it perfectly.
Where she's like, there's like Drazi and Bracchiri conflict.
Yeah,
there's
just
all this
describing
shit.
This like, and day-to-day. They're all kind of laughing about how it's like, oh, the Drazi and the Bracchiri, they don't want each other to have sex with each other's women in brothels or whatever. I had a lot of fun with that, and I think she ended up in a like exactly the right place that I found satisfying in a way that I didn't expect. Like, I didn't think I'd want to see her again. I didn't think I'd care who was running covert intelligence.
She actually slots in pretty well.
Yeah, I like that we got like a little farewell scene of her just doing her job, you know, in this new role. It felt, I was like, oh, cool. Okay.
Easy breezy, beautiful cover girl.
Yeah, it's, you did it right. That character fits right there, and it all, the lattice work all works there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is the part where I'm like, we're 20 minutes into the episode, and I feel like we're done. Like, everyone has said bye.
Yeah, what else could happen?
Nothing. We're
in
done.
Both episodes, I was like, what else are we going to see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with Sleeping in Light, every single moment feels like the last moment of the show.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, okay, now we're done, right? And Sheridan literally is like, all right, let's walk hand in hand off the station for the last time. And then they have the little procession with him and Lanier and Delenn. And then what is it? What interrupts them, actually? I can't remember. I'm looking at the notes. Further chagrin to see Lockney and people waiting for him. Oh, and then there's like a quiet procession scene. I kind of like that it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, we're walking and like no one's like cheering, or because Sheridan has had so many scenes where he's in front of a lot of people and it's either people yelling at him or like breaking a TV that he's on or you know, being like, oh my god, he's alive. And now it's just like Sheridan's here, like he's kind of a set, like has that status now.
Yeah.
And
it was so funny because at the beginning of the episode, he says to Lockley, I don't want a big thing. I don't want anybody to know. I just want to leave. And then he gets up in front of this crowd to say something. And the only thing he says is, Delenn.
Delenn,
go ahead.
Your turn. You do the words, right?
You don't want to do this. And then she gives a nice, cute monologue about how the Minbari don't have a word for goodbye, and so yeah. You know, peace out, TTYL, see you later, everybody.
Peace out, Boy Scout, all that.
Yeah. I thought that was nice. I feel like a lot of the characters get to have a sort of final monologue that the actors get to chew into and give a lot to, which must have felt really good for them.
Right.
So this was sort of Delenn's, like, you know,
her last
her moment. And she gets a couple moments in the next one, but they're all sort of revolving around Sheridan and around him dying. This one was like for her to be able to say, to show how far she's come and to say goodbye
exactly
to this place.
Then this is the part where we get the window shot of like, here's the new gang, and it's
going down the list here. Corwin, love to see it. Very happy to see him. Staying at his post. Tessa, doing great. Chief of Covert Intelligence.
Veer, the new Centauri ambassador.
Yep.
I don't know why we need an ambassador anymore, but sure. Elizabeth Lockley.
Zach Allen.
Talon. Mm-hmm. I love all my friends. Dr. Hobbs.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Med Lab Chief of Staff.
Fine.
Then Sheridan is like going to take a nap on the ship because they're like, oh no, they're like the pilot left. We told him to leave. And they're like, why? And they're like, we wanted you guys to pilot the ship. Yeah. And it's Delenn and Sheridan piloting, and they're like, all right, here we go. And then he like goes to do something, and then last minute they're like, there's a problem on the ship. And you're like, really? And then we got the commercials, and we see that there's like a leak somewhere, mm-hmm. and there's an employee on the ship trying. Is it on the White Star that this is happening?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some sort of leak gas in the weapon system or something. This is after Delenn and Sheridan are hanging out in their room, and he's pacing around, and she's like, do you want to go for a walk? And he's like, No.
I'm going to go. He says no like 80 times in this scene.
And then
scene.
He says,
no,
yeah, I'm going to go for a walk.
I'm going to go for a walk.
These two episodes, Delenn and Sheridan's relationship felt fully lived in and real.
Absolutely.
There were plenty of times where I was like, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
But in this episode, the fondness that they have for each other, and him deferring to her in the speech, and then being kind of annoyed with each other in close quarters, and then the conversation they have about Lanier in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about that in a moment. But so he's on his little walk. He sees something's wrong. He goes to help. The guy's like, no, don't come in. The door's going to close, and it closes. And then we get this moment, dude, that's like, I don't know about it. I think it was good.
The Lanier?
I think so.
Okay.
You don't like it?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Let's chew on it.
So Lanier sees that something's wrong. He sees the door's closed, and Sheridan's like, open the door, dude. Like, let us out.
He literally looks at the door panel and goes, like, huh.
He reaches for it, and then he pauses and he looks at Sheridan, and he leaves.
Yeah.
To let him die.
It's Lanier!
Like,
Lanier!
Yeah, it's like some, you know, it's a separate piece. It's, what are all these books where people are like, actually, you should die. A separate piece is a big one.
Okay.
It's like a separate piece. Did you read a separate piece?
Long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Very long time ago. Is that a war book?
No. I think they were going to be soldiers or something. But it's, they're at the prep school, and they're in the tree, and then it's like left kind of up to interpretation if he pushed the hot popular guy on the tree, or if he let him fall.
Oh my god. Ugh. Middle school? I think I read that. Oh yeah, boy. Yeah. Too young to be reading books like that. Yeah, so this is the moment. This is Lanier betraying Dion Leshock.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, again, the argument for like why these plot lines are actually good is this is how this would happen in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And Delenn totally explains it. Because Sheridan is like, why would he do this? I thought like we were over this. And she says something along the lines of like, sometimes we fall out of character for like a brief moment in our lives, and then we have to like accept that and reckon with that moment for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And Lanier did it. He fell out of character for a moment.
Yeah, right.
Which is like, you really don't see that in a TV show. That's why it feels so weird, is you're like, this feels so odd. Like, Lanier has had so many moments to be like, I'm over the land, not a problem anymore. I'm better now. I believe in the Rangers. I believe in the cause. And then just in that last moment, he's like, actually, I hesitated.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that. And I think what makes it ultimately like okay for me is he spends the rest of the episode apologizing.
And he tries to come back to save him.
Yes. Yeah. He says, I can't. And then he runs back, tries to save him. But he's already out.
Yeah.
And they've made eye contact. There's no like, there's no doubt about like what happened. Sheridan doesn't like get mad. I love that this is like what season 5 Sheridan is he's like he's way beyond like punching first at all.
Yeah.
And now he's just like, I want to talk to Lanier. Like, I want to talk to him. Not mad at him. Don't want to kill him.
Yeah.
We just need to talk. Lanier is just like, can't do it. he leaves. He steals a ship and leaves. He plans to go places that no one else is going to find him. He has a call, a weird video call with Delenn where he's like, I want you to know that I'm sorry. I'm never coming back until I feel like I can be forgiven. And like, until I've earned forgiveness. She's like, Linear, it's okay. Like, you can come back. And he's like, I don't think I can come back.
Yeah.
It's a moment for him. This is a very mature moment for him.
Yeah.
But
it's an arc and an ending for him, right? It's not, I think what's upsetting about it is that we really loved Linear from the very beginning. And it felt like his arc is just him kind of being further and further broken down and spiraling because of this weird love triangle thing. Which feels believable and real. But it's frustrating because we had such investment in him and because we don't get to see him emerge from the other side better and okay.
Right.
And
we see him working on it, but we don't know.
Yeah.
We see him.
It's sort of the frustration that we had, or the kind of like letdown feeling we had with Ivanova after Marcus's death, where she's like, okay, I'm going to totally close myself off and go become super military girl again.
Right.
But that shit happens in real life. Like, people make big mistakes, they get really hurt, or, you know, a loss or a tragedy happens, and it might take years and years and decades before you see them emerge from that and see things be okay. You just don't... It's rare, I think, in a TV show that, like, you leave a character in that state.
Yes.
And so leaving Linear in this state where he, like, for the entire show has been this loyal warrior doing what's right. Now he almost murdered the president because he likes Delenn a lot.
Exactly. And I think that is going to be one of my, like, when we eventually finish talking about the series. Mm-hmm. One of my concluding points about Babylon 5 is that I'm used to TV shows, especially science fiction, being sort of not hopeful, but envisioning a future. I mean, it's like it's another response to Star Trek, just like Farscape was a response to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, actually, optimism doesn't like carry us through to the end of the universe. Like, we bring all of our problems with us.
Yeah.
We bring our messiness. We bring our like messy character arcs. Like, this show is firmly against the idea that like happy endings just work like happen in real life.
Right. Right.
Again, that brings me to problems that I have with Sleeping in Light, but this in particular is like, yeah, sometimes you just fucking, you make one more mistake after you promise yourself you're good.
Yeah, right.
You're like, I'm absolutely better, and then you completely fuck it up one more time.
Yeah.
Like, totally happens.
Right.
So, in that way, it really works and feels in line with, at least what season 5 has been saying about the show.
It's a show that really, you know, makes you question again and again, and makes you uncertain of the answer to the question of, can people change?
Yeah.
And you can point to some characters in this episode and say, Jakar has completely changed.
Yeah.
Sheridan has changed significantly.
Yeah.
Linear has maybe changed for the worst, or maybe he's always been like this, and now
he's at least self-aware now.
Yeah. It feels like Delenn, I don't know if she's changed or not.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to Londo, that is the core of the character who's answering that question the most. And makes it the hardest to answer, can people change? I think is what we see from Londo later, we'll talk about that. But I don't know. I think I'm leaving this Linear thing feeling bad about it in a way that I'm supposed to feel bad about
it.
And that's what
makes
it
okay.
Like, it feels like it's serving a narrative purpose, or it's serving a thematic purpose when you think about the show as a whole, that Linear turns into this shitty fuckboy at the very end.
Right. The last couple of minutes actually are the Londo stuff, so we can just get to that now.
Yeah, is that the only thing left?
That's all. The last thing I have in my notes, at least. Yeah.
Well, I like the conversation that Delenn and Sheridan have about Linear.
Oh, sure.
I think that's a really interesting scene, because Sheridan's, again, like you said, he's not going in guns blazing, being like, I've got to fire that guy and kick his ass, which Sheridan probably would have done that when we first saw him.
Totally.
Instead, he's just saying to Delenn, like, listen, yeah, maybe he was coming back to save me. Maybe he was coming back to see if I was dead. I just don't know.
I don't know. I'll never know.
And it's so, like, Delenn in this scene, it's so interesting because her husband almost died, And her approach to the conversation is, but think about how Lanier's feeling right now.
Like, think about him. He's going through a lot.
Yeah.
Don't get mad at him.
And it really makes you question, like, who is Delenn doing that for? Like, is she doing that for herself because she starts the conversation being like, yeah, look, he was in love with me, but I didn't see any indication that he was going to, like, kill you. And yeah. Sheridan says he just tried to do that. So here
he looked
we
at
are.
The button and didn't press it. Like, yeah. What?
So it makes you wonder, is Delenn saying this to Sheridan because she wants him to not be mad at her and she wants to, you know, smooth the thing over? Or is she saying it for Sheridan's sake to, like, give him some perspective on the situation so that he's not, like, poisoned with anger by it? It's hard, you know, because I think the Minbari like to present themselves as people without agendas who are, like, kind of detached and
objective. They don't have words for goodbye, you know?
Yeah, but I still struggle to figure out, like, what is Delenn's agenda here? Because I think that there's something at play. I don't know.
I think when I look at, like, their relationship at this point, it reminds me of a lot of married couples that I know in real life.
Yeah.
Where it's not just about, like, I need to change and work on myself. It's like, I need to help you work on yourself.
Right.
Like, she asks Sheridan questions that are, like, making him challenge himself and be like,
true.
Like, yeah. Should I have punished Lanier? Like, was that a good idea? She's not just being like, you know, like, sometimes you'll see older parents that are, like, the mom will see the dad get angry, for example, and be like, oh, honey, like, you always get mad. Like, try not to,
true.
Like, hold you back. But she's like, no, like, I want you to figure it out.
True.
She's, like, kind of pushing him to answer his own questions.
Right.
Which is really good for his development. But then again, it's like, whether or not, like, Delenn has her own ulterior motive.
Yeah, it just,
like,
seems like she's not really taking accountability for, like, she knew that this was an issue and they never talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I do agree. She's pushing him on how he's reacting to it in a way that's good for him. But then I don't see the reciprocal of that where Sheridan's pushing her.
Yeah.
To, he does a little bit, I guess, like, by saying he could have been coming back to see if I was actually dead.
Right.
But I don't know. I think I just want to see Delenn being more accountable to, like, what she has done to Lanier, and mm-hmm. like, because she's known about how his feelings, she's known how the things she's done have been affecting him, and she's chosen to continue doing those things. It doesn't mean that she's responsible for his feelings or his actions, but she still was cognizant of the effect of the things that she was doing, like what that effect was on him. And I don't know.
It bums me out that she has the awareness to work with Sheridan and be back and forth with him, but, like, she just feels so blind to, like, what Lanier is doing.
Yeah.
But does she? Like, is she actually blind, or right, does she that, know, and yeah. she's wielding that? Like,
yeah.
There's so much there.
And that's what makes it feel like a good scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is truly a testament to this show's ability to not, like, cut clean, which is kind of what I was worried about with these last couple of episodes in the finale, but I think it works out in a way that I found mostly very satisfying. Before we finished Sleeping in Light, I had tweeted, like, oh man, like, I'm just in a really emotional spot and I've already, like, basically started crying. And a couple of people were like, yeah, it's like, it's the saddest episode of the show. And that was how it was hyped up to us, was like, it's really sad. It's really potent and beautiful and all this stuff. But, you know, it's, That's where the show is trying to land. That's like, that's yeah. its moral message.
I agree.
We wrap up Objects at Rest with Londo, our boy Londo. Ugh, Londo Mollari.
Buddy.
They're his last scenes in the show.
Oh, this is the toughest part of the episode, I think.
Truly, because this is, again, like, endings don't happen clean. Like, maybe that's the thesis of Objects at Rest, or Objects in Motion, Objects at Rest, because they're yeah. kind of a two-parter, is, like, you don't get clean endings. Yeah. Life doesn't work like that. This one literally feels like you are setting up either another season or another, like, couple episodes of plot.
Right.
Because they come back to Londo on Centauri Prime. They take a brief stop to say goodbye to him. And he's Emperor Londo now. He's got the clothes. He's clearly very exhausted and sad and tired. Mm-hmm. They don't let him drink anymore. The first thing that Delenn mentions to him is, like, you seem a lot, but he's like, putting on really nice airs to them, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, you are acting much nicer to us than the last time we saw you. We thought we were going to say goodbye.
Yeah.
We're getting one more goodbye, and now you're suddenly really nice. Like, you got something going on, right?
Yeah.
And he plays it really well, because he's being manipulated this whole time.
Yeah.
He's being forced to, like, wield their friendship. He's trying to give them something that's going to ultimately harm them.
He's also
trying
to give them clues to, like, something's wrong right now.
But I can't say it.
Yeah. The layers of what Londo's having to do, how it's being written, and how Jurassic is performing it, it's really rich.
Yeah.
And it leaves you with this ambiguous feeling of how much of that was Londo being genuine, how much of that was for the Drac. Is he, like, this just selfish guy now who just wants an hour of peace? Because at the end, they're like, your reward
is an hour.
An hour away from us. So it's like, is he only doing things for his, like, momentary freedom? What, you know, what's motivating him? Because I think his desperation to have a drink with them, you could read as either, like, he just wants a drink, or, like, I need alcohol so I can tell you what's going on because it, like, sleeps the thing.
Yeah.
And, like, keep this horrible Drac thing from happening. Yeah, and I love the moment, this realization I had just now, where they're like, you were so mean before, and he says, oh, I was playing to the audience.
Yeah.
But the audience wasn't the Centauri. The audience was the Drac, right? And that's like, ooh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's playing to a lot of people. You know, he's playing to us, the audience, also. He's kind of like, he's always playing. Orlando's always been a performer of sorts.
Right.
And I feel so much realism in the scene where he's like, oh, Sheridan, like, you want to get a drink, right? And Sheridan's like, oh, I don't touch this stuff anymore because it's unhealthy for them in Bari. And I'm an adult now. And like, or I'm going to be a father soon. Like, I cut myself off. And he's like, oh, yeah, bummer. Oh, yeah, oh, we're not drinking. Okay. Hey, so I have this urn. Like, yeah. I can't use the one thing I was going to use to talk to you. So here's this thing. I have a gift for you guys. It's an urn. And they're like, that's cool. And he's like, it contains, and this is like the most beautiful bullshit. He's like, it's the water from the first river that ran through Centauri Prime.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow. And they deliver it perfectly like they're receiving like a bad wedding gift, or they're like, wow.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. It's an avocado. Thanks. He's like, I hope you enjoy it. I want you to give it to your son on his 18th birthday. It's going to be really important to him, as that's like a Centauri tradition, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, thanks, Londo. Really appreciate that.
And he's totally making all this
complete
up.
Nonsense.
It must be totally.
It's fiction.
Up. Yeah. He made it up.
He made it up.
It was written by a writer.
Yes. He says goodbye to them.
Yeah.
And then in private, the Drac are like, great job, Londo. Really good work. We wrote that script for you. Very happy. You nailed it.
Yeah.
You get an hour. And then a man from like off screen hands him a jug of wine.
Drink. Yeah. And then it's like a little glass. And then he's like, now what? And then they're like, oh, we're just going to wait for years.
Yeah.
And he's like, years?
Wait?
And they're like, yeah, we're super patient. We're good. Everything is exactly where it needs to be.
You've lined up all the chess pieces and now you can just coast.
Yeah, now our plan's just going to work on its own. So thank you. Thank you very much. The Drac are so scary.
Yeah.
They're not to do so anything. Scary.
Just the effortless handing of a gift and he could just destroy the Interstellar Alliance, basically.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, the legacy of Sheridan.
Yeah.
Because then we pan into the urn and there's a keeper inside it, or there's like a Drac thing in there.
Yeah.
This is where I was like, what are you setting up for? Like, what? And my brain is still in like waiting for the next event to happen. And then I'm like, no, there is no next event. Sleeping Light was filmed way before this.
Yeah,
like,
right.
There's nothing.
We don't see Londo again.
Right. We don't see that's it. That's the last Londo scene. He's not in Sleeping Light at all.
I don't think he's going to be in Crusade or any of the other stuff. Yeah.
Bye, Londo.
So he's done.
Speaking of like some not clean endings, like, what did you think? Londo was going to be saved? Like, no, he's the most owned man in space.
Right, exactly.
He's been like that since season one. Yeah. Like, that's the tragedy, you know? Shows can end in tragedy. It's, I think, to get a little big brain for a sec, like, Shakespeare wrote a lot of stories like this, like tragedies, where it's like, no, it ends sad. And there's a difference between like ending sad, ending happy, like comedies and tragedies is like the way we think of how fiction is supposed to work. And then like realistic stories, which is like what the postmodern storytelling is, which is like you can kind of have both.
Right.
You can have like a story with a good arc and happiness and good things that also ends ambiguously and sadly.
Yeah.
And that's just that works.
That's life. That's how life goes.
And that feels satisfying in its own way.
Yeah.
But we'll get back to talking about that as we talk about Sleeping Light. The final scene of this episode is a scene that's supposed to be to feel very wholesome. It's Sheridan recording a like log for his son on his 20 to listen to on his 21st birthday.
Yeah, just advice and stuff.
Yeah,
it kind of goes on a little long.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's my thing with it.
Yeah,
like this was supposed to be, I think, Bruce Boxleitner's big monologue that he gets to do at the end of the production of season 5.
Yeah.
Because they'd already done the Sleeping in Light stuff before. But it's just a lot of stuff. And it felt like it was going to lean into the joke of him being like, oh, and another thing. And I wish it had kind of done that more so that it felt like a happy... go lucky, like, dad's rambling again.
He's just talking, because that's how I imagine David is gonna hear it. When he's like he's 21, he's like, dad's just like talking about like never start a fight unless you finish. Like, what does
he's
he mean?
Literally told me all of these things before,
like a thousand times. Yeah, come on, dad. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
The cute part is, yeah, when he says never start a fight unless you finish, and then like Delenn finishes the line for him.
Yeah. And then he finishes it back.
He's like, no, I get the last word.
My advice.
I hit diary end or whatever. Yeah. And that's where the episode ends. Is him being like, yeah, never start a fight. He's like, be a good person. You're gonna struggle. You're gonna find yourself in the middle of nowhere someday. It's okay. You have people that are here to help you. Like, trust in the power of things. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful. It's the object is at rest. Let's read some emails, yeah?
Okay, let's do it.
Fabulous.
What do you think of, by the way, the titles, Objects in Motion, Objects at Rest? What does that mean?
I really like...
because if we expand that, objects in motion tend to stay in motion. Objects at rest tend to stay
at rest. Right.
So, but what are the things that are motioning and resting? Because the objects in motion...
people are leaving.
It's like Jakar and Leeta are going somewhere, and Franklin's getting success, and Garibaldi's doing stuff. And then I guess in this episode, people are like in their new positions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the objects at rest is like... this is like people's inability to change sometimes. Like Londo's like, he's just stuck. He's at rest. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And people being like, and we're going to now park it. We're going to stay on Minbar, or these people are going to stay on B5. Like, this is like people settling.
That's interesting. Like, because the conflicts of this episode come from characters who, like, thought they had changed or wanted to change and didn't.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who are at rest, like, their development as characters.
Exactly. Like, they no longer have momentum.
Yeah.
In their grand scheme of life, be it any of the crew of B5 or any of the ambassadors or any of the ISA, like,
yikes.
Those are just people who can't go anywhere anymore.
Yeah.
It serves as like a weird pre-ending, honestly, because then it's like, and also here's more rest.
Right. Sleeping.
There's some sleeping.
Time to sleep.
I love sleeping. Let's read some emails.
Okay. Let's do it.
The first email is a brief one from Nick. He says, how is it possible that Magellan has never seen Terminator 2? I can't even. Magellan, you disappoint me many times with the lack of films that you've seen. That's okay.
Nick said that? Come on, bro.
No, I said the disappointing part. Wow. He just said, how is it possible that Magellan never saw Terminator 2?
I just... because that movie came out before I was born, and I never sought to, like, watch it, you know?
Babylon 5 came out before you were born,
kid. I know, and I'm seeking to watch it.
You should see the Terminator movies. They're fun.
I've never like gone out of my way to watch Terminator or Mad Max or Indiana Jones, or there are a bunch of those things that I just didn't ever make the effort to watch.
It's a film canon thing too, where like when I was renting movies from Blockbuster, I was like, I want to watch all these movies. And after a certain point, I was like, a lot of them are like, it's not that they're not good, but like, okay, I watched it. Indiana Jones is fine. Like, and it's kind of racist, actually. Some of it's like kind of bad.
And I think when I was in high school investing in like film canon watching like that, it was like, what are the movies that on their own have some kind of prestige or buzz,
like The Prestige?
No. Like I don't know, yeah, you know,
Seven,
of things, Seven or Fight Club, or The Cuckoo's Nest, or Fight Club, or Amadeus, or like this kind of mishmash of movies that I'd heard about and heard were lauded for some reason. As opposed to like, well, Terminator 2 is so good, bro. It's like sick. They shoot the thing. And you know.
Yeah. Terminator 1, I will say, as I remember, is like very... it's got all the themes you want out of the Terminator franchise, like in one movie. It's just like a woman running from a man. Uh-huh. Terminator 2 is like a fun action movie that's like kind of progressing that. Terminator 3 is nonsense. And then everything after that, I forget. I know the Sarah Connor Chronicles was like okay, as I remember it, but...
like, I've also never watched Rocky, and to me, Rocky and the Terminator are in the same zone. Oh,
yeah. Rocky's good, though.
Right, but they're in the same zone of, like, these are franchises that people are like, oh, that's a fun, good franchise, as opposed to, like, this film.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying that in high school I had like a perfect notion of what like a great sure. film is, because I watched Fight Club.
Yeah. And I was like, this is cinema.
This is so good. And like, I loved Garden State.
Hell yeah. You know?
I still love Garden State, but I understand that it is a flawed movie. But anyway.
That was such a weird movie to watch this year for me, by the way.
You watched it this year?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. This is my first time. And I was like, ah, oh, I totally get why people love this.
Yeah, you missed the moment.
Though, you totally. But it's good. Like, it's well made. Like, it's well. It's
yeah. And if you watch it at the right moment in your life, then it's really good.
It's like getting into the Shins.
Yeah.
It's like everyone I know.
You have to watch it right after a breakup in high school. And yeah. And then you're good.
And then delicious. Nailed it. Made like a hammer and nailed it.
Yeah.
Do you want to read the Stan mail that we got?
Oh, yes.
A nice, delicious Dan mail.
So this is a Dan mail about Wheel of Fire and Objects in Motion, the episodes we watched 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Dan says, I like your decided upon viewing order from this point forward. Okay, good. I'm glad that we reached a...
Dan-approved viewing order.
Dan-approved. What's the word for when you two people are arguing and you find a thing? Compromise. I'm glad that we found a compromise between Dan and Nick.
Yes.
And when I was listening back to Chatsalon 5... Mm-hmm. I think the most recent time that Dan and Nick were like, this is what you should do, we treated it as like, new ideas.
We should do
how
it.
How we should think about the show. But from the very beginning, they've been having this war with each other. There have been actually several times where we've been
where they've argued our viewing order?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And not ever like directly at each other, sure. But always suggesting kind of different
things. That's really funny.
And we've considered it multiple times and then forgotten that we thought about it.
Yeah.
But I'm also pleased with what we picked. So Dan continues, honestly, once you get to Sleeping in Light, I don't worry so much about your viewing order in regards to the movies past the original series. But because it's the way that the B5 fandom rolls, other people will like it and other people will hate it. It's hard to find universal agreement there. With that said, I find that I'm not particularly concerned about which viewing order you decide to go with on Crusade. This is with regard to the production order versus the air order.
Air order.
The first time I saw it in the original broadcast order, and then later on I watched it again with the decided upon JMS order. I don't think you'll be fundamentally lost watching it either way, as most of the episodes are very standalone. But with that said, there will be weird artifacts where things don't quite match up, no matter which order you watch it in.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the crew goes through a uniform change, and it's just handled oddly in the chronology. In the past, you guys had also mentioned covering the scripts of the episodes that never got made, and I'll be interested in seeing how you handle that. I would argue that Crusade's best episodes are the ones that never got past the script stage.
That's hilarious.
And then he says, remember when I referenced that terrible short story that JMS wrote after the series where a revived Marcus lives happily ever after with an Ivanova clone?
Hell yeah.
I now want to reference another short story that JMS wrote after the fact in Amazing Stories called Genius Loci. It's about one of the adventures that Jakar and Leeta go on during their travels. On the plus side, we see the return of horny Jakar.
Yes.
On the minus side, Leeta goes dark AF, but not in an interesting or satisfying way. If you dare, it's out there on the internet to be read for free. So I think we should read both of those.
Yeah. The Babylon 5 media that I still want to consume is obviously the movies, Crusade. I just ordered a copy of To Dream in the City of Sorrows.
Yeah.
So I'll be trying to read that at some point, probably next year. There's no like real schedule on that, but I would like to have that under my belt.
Yeah.
Because that's like the canon B5 book, I guess. And whatever the last comic that I didn't read was. And then that's like, I'll be satisfied like having quote unquote 100%ed Babylon 5, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, these like short story stuff that's like JMS wrote all this stuff is like,
I want to read them.
Yeah.
I want to read them.
I'm interested.
Yeah. So we'll talk and figure out, and if you have suggestions out there, folks, like if you'd like to hear us discuss stories or that book,
mm-hmm.
we could plan a reading club or book club episode, or, and I don't know if that'd be on the main feed or in Patreon or what, but
yeah,
probably on the main feed.
Yeah, it's a B5 thing. It should probably be on the main feed, or like on the Patreon feed for free, you know?
Yeah.
So can that be like our backup feed?
Yeah. So we'll think about it.
Nick goes on with a new email.
Okay.
This is regarding the River of Souls. We actually got an email
yes.
about a movie.
Yes.
Love it when we get movie emails.
Yes.
He says, here it is, what I think is the best of the B5 movies.
Agreed.
Absolutely. A Call to Arms, a close second.
Okay.
Which is what he says, which is
good
exciting.
To hear.
It allowed Lockley to shine. Absolutely.
Yep.
It's the last appearance of Corwin. Second best next to his trick hat scene in Day of the Dead.
True.
And yes. It's the sexiest Babylon 5 has ever been.
Yeah.
And more than it should be.
Yes, agreed.
JMS called deepfakes decades early.
Yeah.
Because of the weird, like, the hologram people.
That's
yeah.
true.
I didn't want to get you hyped on it, so I kept quiet, but I'm happy you had fun with what is essentially a good Babylon 5 episode that proved Sheridan isn't really needed. It's a good point.
Yeah.
You can make a whole story without him. You already know which movie I hate. That's Legend of the Rangers. So I don't need to say it again, but I still hate it primarily for a specific scene.
Okay.
Which is scary.
Interesting.
He's looking forward to hearing our thoughts on Sleeping in Light next week.
Great.
Which is this week. That's this episode. We have a Pat email. I'll give you that one.
Okay. Pat says, "Hey guys, hope you enjoyed the last two episodes of Babylon 5 proper. I only regret a little that you aren't doing the last episode as a live commentary, or at least recording for soundbites later, for I imagine you guys will tear up as I do. Mm-hmm. I agree that River of Souls is actually a decent movie. I always thought I didn't like it, but had rewatched in anticipation of your arrival on this movie and found it quite a good watch. I think I just never loved Soul Hunters as a thing much, and either remembered it sourly for that or didn't give it a chance in the first place." And then he closes by saying, "Call to Arms is a pretty good movie, too. The music is pretty different, but good. Plus, it's got Tony Todd. I'd take Tony over McShane anytime." And that's from Pat.
"I'd take Tony" is my new Broadway musical.
Yeah.
Tony Todd, Candyman.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's great.
I love Tony Todd. He's really cool. I think that's our last email. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, kids. I will remind people while we're still in the email segment, you have one more week to send in your emails and voice comments about what Babylon 5 means to you and about Chatsalon 5, your sort of like finale thoughts, because we're doing the season 5 finale / series recap next week.
Yeah.
So definitely send those in.
Yeah. If you want a sense for what it sounds like when we did our finale of Farscape, I think it's Scape Chats 51. We got, you don't have to look it up.
Yeah.
You just rolled your eyes. It's like, oh, now
I gotta look it up.
Back up Magellan's claim. It's okay. We had people send in their audio recordings, so you can get a sense for how we edited it into the episode. And it's a really nice thing for folks to hear, I think, so please send those our way.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
We've actually gotten some, because I, like, when I tweeted about Sleeping in Light, people were, like, tweeting at us, like, "I love, this is my thing about Babylon 5, and I was like, save it, but, like, we'll round all that up for next week. Cool. We will be right back, dear listener, after a brief musical break to discuss Sleeping in Light. Flick the lights on.
Isn't it ironic that they turn the lights off in Sleeping in Light?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome back to Chatsalon 5. The second episode we watched this week was the final episode of Babylon 5, Season 5, Episode 22, Sleeping in Light. It was written by JMS.
Wow!
It was directed by Jaomimi Mamblin Slimsky. You get one clean one and one nasty one, JMS.
Yeah, this is your only chance.
It aired November 25th, 1998, and it takes place from December 28th, 2280 to January 20th, 2281. Why? Why does it take a month? Where's the month in there?
Where is the month in there? I don't remember anything that happened in this episode, to be fair. It's the final one.
Wait, tell us what happened in this episode. Happened.
Sure, Majan. In this episode, in the year 2281, 20 years since John Sheridan died on Zahadum, and 20 years since the Interstellar Alliance was formed, Sheridan realizes his time is running out, and he calls his old friends for one last get-together before embarking.
Time.
One last call for alcohol, so just one whiskey and beer.
Nothing's the same, but we live underwater.
And your great-great-great-granddaughter. You do
pretty fine.
Is doing fine. Pretty doing fine. I was just showing Magellan that the song Year 3000 by Busted was covered by the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, well, I thought it was the Jonas Brothers Ridge, but nope. I was wrong.
And they changed the chorus and made it less
differently sexual.
Yeah.
But anyways, differently sexual is also my memoirs. He calls his friends for one last get-together before embarking on one final journey. In the process, he learns that his fate and that of Babylon 5 remain intertwined. Hmm. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that.
He says that.
Oh my God, I'm so dumb. Why? To the last minute, I missed it. He died on the day that Babylon 5 was decommissioned.
Yes, he said that.
No, I didn't. He didn't say that.
He literally was like, it seems like our fates are still intertwined.
I don't believe you.
Oh my God.
Roll the tape.
And then Zach was like, what?
What? Are you dying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the final
set of... the, like, guy who was there. The random guy.
Johnson. Yeah, we're gonna call him John. Corporal Johnson. Johnson. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, Lyndon B.
Yeah.
It's the last episode of B5, and the reason we're delaying talking about it is because we want to keep talking about B5.
We're afraid that nothing will be good
enough. Also, we don't know how to podcast linearly at all, and we're masking that by talking about nostalgia.
Yeah.
I want to start by saying that this is... It's a weird episode to talk about because of its role in the series. Like, it's... positioning in the show, because as we know from reading about production, it was filmed and written and everything at the end of season 4.
Yep.
But it aired now at the end of season 5, a season that wasn't even necessarily meant to happen as it did, and so it definitely feels more in tone and in writing style we just ate between sessions like a late season 4 episode.
Yeah, there are certain things that it's responding to or that it's resolving that well, the clearest example that came up in this episode was... So the gist of it is Sheridan is like, oh my gosh, I'm dying because what's-his-face, Lorian said that in 20 years I'll probably just stop living at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can get back to the beginning scenes in a second, but the gist of the plot is that he's sending letters to all of his friends to gather them on Mimbar to have one final nice dinner
sort together. Of a gathering.
Yeah, oh, the gathering. Wow.
They did that on purpose.
Wow. Yeah. They didn't do that on purpose.
No,
you did that
I did
purpose.
On purpose. Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
good job.
Yes, thank you.
Sort of a call to arms, you might say.
And ultimately, this will all be told in the hit novel, The Legend of the Rangers.
Right. But
sort of a crusade, if you... Sorry.
But the clearest scene that showed me, like, oh, this was written at the end of season 4, mm-hmm. was when Garibaldi gets his letter. And then he reads it, and he's like, Sheridan's dying, and Franklin's like, should I arrange a shuttle for one person or two?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, in season 5, Garibaldi and Sheridan are fine.
Yeah.
They patch it up, and they're good. But when we were at the end of season 4, they were still beefing.
Yeah.
You know,
they're beefing.
They're beefing. I'm bringing back all the callbacks. Yeah, they were still pretty thick in that beef, so it made sense that they'd have to address that in this episode, whereas it... Now we don't need that address, really. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, how do we do this, man? How do we approach this?
I don't know. Let's just not. Let's just call
it. We just don't do it.
Well, let's talk about it as an ending, first of all.
Yeah.
So
okay, yeah. So because we had this question, or I asked this question of, like, is this the way to end the show? Because I'll be honest, people were advocating that we watch this after everything.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did not.
Me
do
too.
That.
Big yeah. time. Especially, like, not after Crusade, because, yeah, that, like, happens chronologically before this, but this show, this doesn't reference any of that. None of that exists in the span of the show. If anything, I almost lean towards, like, maybe we could have just watched this, like, with season 4.
Honestly, yeah.
You know? And then watched season 5 as an epilogue season.
Yeah.
Because that would have been technically production order.
Right.
But the other thing is, like, Babylon 5 has already had so many finales that just one more is, like, I don't know what I expected. Mm-hmm. I like a lot about it. I like that it's bringing it close to Sheridan and the Lens arc in a really beautiful way. I like how it wraps up and brings back, like, little elements of every season of the show. Mm-hmm. And how it references a lot of those things, and it's people reflecting on what they did right and wrong. I think it's more emotional than Deconstruction of Falling Stars.
Definitely, yeah.
But it's less, I guess it's, like, less science fiction-y.
True.
Because Deconstruction is very, like, looking forward, obviously, and speculative, whereas this is way more reflective and, like, mm-hmm. looking back.
Oh,
so true. It almost just feels like the end of, like, it is the end of a good drama series. Mm-hmm. Like, the show has had so much to say about, like, where the world is going and where humans are going, for better and for mostly worse.
Yeah.
And then to end on this one that's just, like, a very quiet, calm reflection on, like, what we've done so far. What was good, what was bad, and how we want to close out.
Yeah.
because I think Sheridan's moment in the back end where he's like, I want to go out on my own, is really beautiful, because he's realizing, like, I brought all these people together. I'm the reason they know each other. I'm the reason for the alliance, but I've made a lot of mistakes. And the only way for this narrative to work out mm-hmm. is for me to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, Delenn is like, you're thinking about business till your dying breath, like, literally. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Like, the one thing that's been completely consistent about Sheridan is that he's always been about the job. He's always been about, like, how can I make the alliance work? How can I bring people together? And in Sleeping in Light, he brings people together. Mm-hmm. And he makes the alliance work. Mm-hmm. At least to the best of his ability. He acknowledges, like, it'll probably get messed up in the future, but this is what I was able to do.
Yeah. So as a final thing to watch, do you... What if this had happened and we'd watched the Babylon 5 episodes in chronological order? Like, we didn't watch Crusade in chronological order. We still watch that after.
Yeah.
But right now, we watched Sleeping in Light, and then we saved Deconstruction of Falling Stars and made that the last thing that we watched.
From Babylon. Wow. That'd be weird.
Yeah.
The problem is there's no good answer because of the way the production is.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I could just say, like, watch exactly how we... like. Yes, ultimately, if someone really asked me right now, I think I would just say watch it as we did.
Yeah.
Watch it in release order. But everything feels a little bit messy. Every version of that feels a little bit messy.
Right.
Because you put Deconstruction last, then it's, like, a little sad, but it doesn't feel very, final. There are
it
aspects
feels
of
detached.
The...
if yes. The last thing you end on is the, like, the human Earth. Vorlon guy being like, we've saved all the records.
Yeah.
Now back to my planet.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I'm going to turn into a being of light now. Yeah. If you end on objects at rest, it's just like this quiet, like, conflict. Yeah, conflict continues. If you end on Sleeping in Light, which we are, it's the best you can do. It's the best you're going to get, because it feels like on one hand, let's get the band back together. Mm-hmm. But it's not just that. Like, that's why I think I still feel emotionally weird about it, is it really was sold to us as, like, everyone's going to get back together 20 years later. It's like a reunion tour.
Yeah.
But instead of, like, going on one final adventure, they just, like, get dinner and talk, which is so good for Babylon 5. Mm-hmm. Because it's never been a show, like, again, the counter to Star Trek. Like, it's not, there's one more threat and we have to fight it and we're all going to get on the ship together. Like, there was a moment, and I think while we were watching it, that I thought that Sheridan was going to be like, oh, let's all go, like, Babylon 5 is empty. Let's go hang out on B5. And I think the show has more respect for Babylon 5 as a physical space on it than that ending would have given it.
Yeah.
Like, that, their final dinner is on Minbar.
Right.
They have a nice dinner. They talk about everything. Ivanova's back, which does feel weird. That's the biggest one.
I should have said that is the biggest, like, this was made at the end of season 4 thing.
Yeah, Ivanova's, like, a major character in this and, like, has monologue and everything.
Yeah.
And Lockley doesn't exist.
Right.
She's fiction.
Yeah.
But when he does go back to Babylon 5, the only people there are a fucking skeleton crew.
Yeah.
It's Zach, it's a guy we've never heard of, and it's, like, the janitor. And Zach had said, I think previously, like, I'm probably going to be here until they turn the lights off. And we got it. To watch the lights get turned off.
The intelligence of the writing there is that Zach said that in Objects in Motion.
Uh-huh.
Which is written way after this.
Right.
So JMS was like, oh, let me seed the line that I already wrote in Sleeping in Light so that he calls it back.
And he says, I'll be here when the lights are off. And then he is.
Yeah.
And he does it. So I think in terms of, like, let's be talking about the Ivanova stuff. She's back. Her arc ends up being she's offered by Delenn the opportunity to lead the Rangers because she's like, Delenn tells her, Sheridan gave me the role. I can't do, I don't want to do it.
Well,
I'm not cut out to do it.
No, that's not it. Okay. She's the president now.
Okay.
And he's running the Rangers.
Got it.
I think.
Okay.
I think they switched. Because what she's saying is, like, when he dies, we need to maintain a balance of a Minbari person and a human person.
Oh.
Each of them is running one branch of this ISA Rangers organization. Because he had declined to be reelected. And so they were like, okay, we'll pick Delenn, which is whatever. This is weird that, like, the same crew again is in charge of everything. And it doesn't feel particularly democratic, but
yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah.
By the way, we didn't talk about this, but Londo in the last episode describes the Interstellar Alliance as, like, one of the greatest empires of history. Yeah. Which, like, if you think about
it's the most damning line he's also ever said about it.
It's an empire created through diplomacy as opposed to military force.
Exactly.
But it is imperial in a certain way.
But through some military force.
Right. Yep.
Right?
Yes.
Check out these ships.
That's true. That is definitely true. So that's all questionable. But I think what it is Delenn is the president, and she's like, we need someone to run the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Ivanova, it should be a human, and it should be you.
Yeah.
Partly because Ivanova has the know-how. She's a general now, which was cool to see.
General Ivanova.
And also because we see that she's disaffected with being a general. So I think I was glad to see Ivanova here because we got to resolve the things with her that I felt were unresolved at the end of season 4.
Yes.
Where it was left off.
Big time.
Where she lives this whole kind of detached military life and she gets to the highest rank and she's like, I hate it here. This is awful. And then she, by the end of everything, she can come home to something that's adjacent to B5 and the mission of B5 and the Rangers. And that's kind of close to Marcus too. So I thought that was appropriate. It just felt really jarring that it's like, oh, this character didn't exist for a season. And then here she is in the finale and we're going to just quickly wrap just up
clean
her
that arc
thing
up.
And you're good. She's good now.
Yeah. And even her like referencing Marcus, you're like, oh.
Oh yeah. Marcus.
Yeah, exactly. And the fate of the Rangers too is just so interesting that I think Claudia Christian's performance there is so good. Like, it's nice to see her again, obviously, because I love her character so much.
Yeah.
But she brings a lot of herself to that scene where she's like, I feel like I have nothing to live for. Because she is somebody who has always been trying to, like, she's a fighter. She's a passionate person.
Yeah.
That's how she was raised with her, like, Russian Jewish upbringing. And she's like, well, we won the biggest fight. Like, what do you do anymore? And Delenn basically hands her an opportunity to be like, you have a thing you can do. Like, you have a purpose now. People are going to rely on you and you can fail. And that is where she's like, I'm happy to do it. Like, I'll accept it. And that's why it's really nice. Like, she gets that moment.
Yeah.
But again, her referencing Marcus with at the dinner is like kind of weird when they're all like doing a toast to the dead. It's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, he was a character, like, sure.
And again, it wouldn't have felt weird if this happened right after the episode where she's like, I should have had sex with him.
Exactly.
Now I'm sad. Goodbye.
Many years later, we're like, oh man, I'm sad about Marcus.
So like, even though the intervening time isn't different, like it would have been 20 years difference regardless.
Yeah.
For us, the time spent in between seeing the setup and seeing the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird.
I think we can kind of go around the dinner table too and like talk about where everyone finds out.
That sounds good.
Veer, looking great.
Oh my god,
looking great.
The introduction of Veer.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot. I was like on the edge of my seat screaming, guys. That was a lot.
So we're on Centauri Prime, and the guards walk in. They're bringing someone a letter, and so you think like, okay, Londo's gonna get his letter.
Yeah.
And they go in the room, and it's two ladies in a bed, and you're like, all right, Londo's in a bed with some ladies, but he's hiding under the covers.
He
did
sex stuff again? Like, great job, Londo.
And then the bottom of the bed, the covers flip up, and it's Veer, and you're like, what? And someone is like, Your Majesty, and you're like, huh?
Hello, mods, please.
Veer's having, like, a kinky situation, and he's the emperor now, and he's, like, kind of rude, too.
He's got bigger hair.
The thing that is really interesting about Veer is that he has become Londo, right?
Pretty much.
Like, there are certain...
I don't know if he has the blowhardiness, though. He's got, like, the sexual, like, the stuff going on, and he's got, like, he's an emperor, like, so he's a little bit snooty now.
Right.
But that's just power.
Right.
Like, I really hope and think that Veer is, like a new version of Londo, like an improved version.
Because the monologue that he gives at the dinner table would seem to indicate that, where I think that was my favorite moment of the episode. They're talking about and making fun of the Pachmara or something and being racist.
Yeah.
And then Veer, like, subtly, but also by taking all the attention at the table, is like, whoa, guys, don't be racist. Actually, the Pachmara are beautiful singers. And he talks about Londo and how they were going through a hallway and they overheard them singing. And Londo was like, we have 75 gods in our pantheon. But, and I've never believed in any of them, but if there was a god, he would sing like that or something.
Yeah.
Which also doesn't make sense because they always say great maker.
Right. You guys have a god.
Yeah.
You have something.
I didn't realize they were, I thought they were monotheistic. But
me too.
I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but Veer kind of gives this speech to speak to the beauty that is inherent in all creatures and all beings, the beauty that's inherent in Londo, even though he'd done wrong, that he was still able to cry at the sound of this music. So that's what's special about Veer, and yeah. what would seem to indicate that he's like a different kind of emperor than mm-hmm. Londo was. Mm-hmm. But he's also like a horn dog, and he's boozing, and they had to put him to bed. So
yeah, you were saying like when he was boozing, like is it suggesting that like he also has a keeper now?
Yeah, I don't know.
I really hope not. But Londo is dead at this point.
Yeah, there's no reason to think that the Drac wouldn't have done that, right? Like, what would have gotten the Drac off of Centauri Prime's back if Londo can't do anything and he can't tell anybody?
Yeah.
Then I'm inclined to believe that Veer also has a keeper on him.
The timeline of events now that we have like the whole picture is a little squiggy mm-hmm. because we know that Londo is killed by Jakar.
Yep.
Right? He's choked out.
Yep.
Now we know from everything that was because he was like, Jakar, I have this thing. I want you to, like, we're going to
end each other. Yeah, let me drinky, and then you're going to kill me.
Yes.
And then it activates, and he is choking Jakar.
Exactly.
We see that scene happen in one of the ones which everyone Sheridan goes to the future. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And we also know that Sheridan goes to the future, and Delenn is on Centauri Prime, which is still burning when she goes, and she's worried about their son, and she says, Sheridan, don't go to Zahadoon.
Right.
So that all adds up, because then we know now that when he goes to Zahadoon, he dies, and by being brought back, his life is reduced to 20 years from that point. So mm-hmm. that's her kind of like, that timeline closes really nicely. But this is 20 years after the end of the last thing.
Yeah.
And wasn't thinking objects at rest, like give it to David when he's 18? So did that already happen?
I don't know. Because then he was saying a whole thing about how like you're 21 when you get something on Earth.
Yeah.
So maybe it happens later.
And we only ever know that that happened because in Deconstruction of Falling Stars, there's like some offhanded line about like, oh, like Sheridan's kid had like some crazy stuff happen with him with a Drac. They like referenced like in a newspaper or something. So I read that like on a wiki or whatever.
Oh.
But there's no, I mean, I don't need a conclusion to that. Like, I'm sure it's like fine, but I'm just trying to like line up the and circle the square sort of.
Yeah,
like
I have faith, given how it's been constructed, that there is like a linear explanation for all of those things.
A linear explanation.
Yeah, of course. Bilinear. By the way, he's dead or
something? Oh, yeah.
Or he's not there.
Well, he's toasted, I guess. Well, because they don't know where he is, so they're just like, if he's dead, he's dead.
But it is kind of confusing, because then why was Delenn captured, and where was Sheridan during that time? Because he was still alive, but he wasn't with her. But then in the beginning, Londo said, like, let's greet our prisoners. So I'm just confused about a lot of the sequence mm-hmm, there. Mm-hmm. And if somebody has the, like, explanation that they could give me an outline form.
Yeah.
Cool. That's great. But otherwise, it doesn't bother me too much.
And that stuff wasn't, like, hanging over this episode at all. It didn't feel like, oh, this is unsatisfying because of that. I don't even think this episode is ultimately unsatisfying. I just think it's marred a little bit by its positioning.
Yeah, by the context of the production.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just makes it like
but it's the best,
just distracting.
It is the best given what they had. Like what the situation they were in. It's like this is what you guys wanted to do. It's about Sheridan coming to terms with things.
And it's ultimately it's a really beautiful finale.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And shows never get to end like this.
No. You were just I think you had just retweeted a tweet yesterday.
Yeah.
About like
this morning, I think.
Yeah. That was like shows need to. Can you find the tweet, actually?
Yeah,
you have that handy?
I can read it for you.
Basically being like, shows should have like their duration planned out and their ending planned out before they start, because otherwise shows tend to just, like, the writing gets progressively worse if they go for too long.
Yeah, so this is from, I don't know who this is, but a Twitter user named Doc Happer, at Dr. Happy Knuckles, I don't know who that is, says, controversial TV take, television shows with a single continuing narrative should never have an open-ended duration. The end should be known by the creators at the start and the number of seasons/shows basically planned. Otherwise, the writing will always get worse.
Which, my only problem with that tweet is that's definitely not a controversial take. It's just like the reality of TV production is you almost never get that anymore. And it's kind of a miracle that Babylon 5 exists, both the space station and the TV show.
Right.
And so, like, yeah, they had a messy production. and the next show had an even messier production, as we've heard. Mm-hmm. But like they really stuck this landing. They really did go for it.
JMS was able to say at the beginning it's going to be 5 seasons, and it was. And
yeah,
it works. Like, it feels like the right length. And this ending is a really nice way to close and mm-hmm. say goodbye to things. Do we want to talk other people at the table, and then we'll kind of talk about overall impact of this?
Sure. I think we can kind of talk about Garibaldi and Franklin in tandem together. Because they're both
there's not a lot going on with Franklin. He's just like even hotter than he was before.
Yeah, he's way hotter.
He's just in his shorts with his muscular legs, and that gray hair is working for him.
Yeah, you were talking about the old man makeup.
Glasses too.
Oof. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oof,
ooh,
baby.
Baby, yes.
So Sheridan has like the white hair makeup, which like looks cool because it's like, oh, he kind of looks like,
and he's got
clean
the
white
beard back, the full beard. Dude.
It's the beard he wants, the dream beard.
Yes, I was sitting through a season of that gross goatee, so that blah, 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 blah. Finally have that sexy sexy little beard.
I want to squeeze. Sheridan has the cute beard. Franklin's got the nice shorts. He's playing tennis with Garibaldi's daughter, who is like fine. Like, she has like a couple lines, and she gets a little bit too dramatic when she's like, "Dad, there's some guys outside." Yeah, it's like, right. Okay, like I'm a CEO. Like, cool. People come in here all the time. It's fine. She got pigtails, which you were like, that's how you know she's a kid.
Yeah.
And she's playing tennis with Franklin. And then the two of them are chatting. And like you said, he's asking, like, if we're going to Earth or going to see the ceremony or whatever, should we, like, book for one or two seats? Garibaldi as a CEO, we've talked about a million times at this point. It's, like, fine. He's chomping cigars now. But I really like the touch that, like, he goes to his bar and he's not pulling out liquor.
He's drinking orange juice.
It's just orange juice.
Yeah.
Which orange Babylon 5, yeah, Sheridan, all there. Yeah, love it. Yeah. They're nice. They're having a nice moment. I think, though, when everybody got together for dinner and they were being racist about the Pokemon, it reminded me that they are now all in
their... super privileged.
Yeah, they're privileged and they're old.
And they're old.
And they're like, yeah, we can laugh about this because we lived our, like, liberal years. Like, we're done with that.
Right.
It's like they've settled into their conservatism, which is, like, a little sad.
Yeah, it's a little sad.
But then
Garibaldi's probably the saddest in that respect.
Yeah. Because now he's rich, too, which is, like, the worst combination. Like, rich and old and white. Like, oh, God.
Because he was always such a rough and tumble, like, you know, he felt like a really grounded, matter-of-fact guy who was, like, doing the right thing sometimes in ways that were questionable, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. at least that's what I was hoping for his character. And now he's like talking to Franklin about how the stocks didn't go up,
right?
And it's like, this is
I gotta forget about that line, because he's like, oh, the stocks didn't go up or down. He's like, isn't that a good thing? He's like, no, if you're not going up, you're not doing anything. And it's like, oh God, he's a capitalist. It's what was gonna happen.
Yeah, it happens to people when they when they have success like that. It just becomes who they are.
You do hate to see it, though.
But you do like to see that, like you said, he's not drinking, and his daughter seems to like him, which is
right. That's good. A good point.
Yeah, there's not like a toxicity at all to their relationship. There is a slight toxicity to him being like, oh, at least she's out shopping.
Women do be shopping, Franklin. That's what you gotta understand, is they be shopping. Yeah, and then I think just the back end being Sheridan takes the White Star. He leaves her in the morning. He says goodbye to Delenn.
Is there anybody else at the table that we didn't mention? I think that's it, right?
Yeah, well, because Jakar's not there. They do toast to Jakar.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish we saw, like, 2 seconds of, like, him and Lita, like, holding hands or something.
Yeah, but he and Londo killed each other, right?
Oh, true. Yeah. So then he's dead.
So he's dead.
Oh, true. Yeah. Okay. But, yeah, so the back end of it is Sheridan gets... I love this, like, talking about, like, it's Sunday morning. Like, it just feels like it's ripped from someone's real life, right? Mm-hmm. He says, when I was younger, my dad would take us all out in his truck on Sunday mornings, and we would dress nice, and he would say, like, pick a direction and we'll go, and we would just drive.
Yeah.
And that was, like, our tradition every single Sunday, and I want to do that, and that's how I want to go out. And Delenn cries and cries and clutches him in bed, and she says, you know, I will allow you to do that. Like, I'll permit it or whatever. Yeah. He gets up early. He gets into his, like, best clothes. He talks about how he barely fits in it anymore.
And he's like, they must have shrunk while I...
She's like, yeah, I'm sure they shrunk. Yeah. Definitely. They hug. They have a beautiful, tearful goodbye. This is the moment where it's like Mira Furlan is playing it like she's horrified.
Yeah.
But it's more like she's just...
She, like, doesn't know what to... Because she's watching the man that she loves walk to his death.
Yeah.
And she has this face of, like, there's literally not a thing I can do.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because he actually, when Franklin first arrives, he does one more medical check. And he's like... He basically says, like, I can't keep doing this. Like, I've been doing this so many times that I can't figure it out. I don't know what's killing you. If you think it's going to, if Lorian told you it's going to be 5 days, it's going to be 5. He tells him in a dream, like, you have, like, 5 days or whatever. So Sheridan goes, he goes to Babylon 5. He He runs into Zach, which is beautiful. It's nice to see old Zach. He's got like a slightly like gruffer accent now.
He's got a limp.
He's got too. A limp.
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense. Like, you work security, like you're gonna hurt yourself at some point. They talk about this is the moment that like got me the most, because I'm always obsessed with like spaces and how we like what the spaces that we inhabit and how those things change over time, our relationship to that space.
Yeah.
And Babylon 5, they haven't talked enough about how like this is a physical thing that exists. Like, this is a home, like this is the scene where they're talking about like Sheridan is touching the walls and Zach is saying like there are layers and layers of lives in here. In 25 years, we've like lived entire arcs, like multiple people have.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful and it's shutting down and we're okay with that. Like, we did a lot here and they can't take that away from us. Just like so nice.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how much we've distanced ourselves from Babylon 5, like, home still matters. Yeah. You know, like, where, what does home mean? What does it look like? And there's something even about just seeing those hallways. It's like, you know, when you see like the last episode of like a sitcom that you love and they do the like close the doors on it, it kind of feels like that, where it's like, oh, I remember like all the weird like pipes and the different room layouts. And like in the previous episode when we saw like the Zocalo, I was like, oh, the Zocalo. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel attached to this space in a way I haven't felt with a lot of shows like this.
It's this moment, I was just thinking of this moment that Sheridan has with the Lyndon Johnson, who we're calling him, where the guy's like, oh, well, the reason that it shut down is because Earth got it back, and they think it's redundant because the Interstellar Alliance does all the stuff it does. And Sheridan has this moment where he steps forward the way that he would when he was angry, and then he looks at the guy, and then he kind of catches himself and he's like, redundant, because he's the one who made it redundant, right?
But that was a success.
Yeah, like, it's a good thing that we don't need Babylon 5 anymore.
But
because it was like a flawed place that had like a dirty sewer inside of it and everybody was fighting all the time, and now we've figured out a better version of that.
Why would we need it?
But you can't help but have an attachment to like rooms and spaces. It reminds me, this is going to be super dorky, but a connection that only I will make. It reminds me of the Bare Naked Ladies song, The Old Apartment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, when you first hear that song, it sounds like the guy is like mad about a breakup or something. He's singing like, you know, this old apartment, I tore the phone out of the wall, this is where we used to live, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's literally just him going back to an apartment that he and the person he's currently with used to live in.
Yeah, they're not broken up.
Yeah, they're together, and he's like, just, there's like an anger or an upset feeling that you can't place on anything, because like what the space was, you still have somewhere else. But now the idea of like someone else lives there, and they're doing their own stuff in this space.
Yeah.
Like, they can't do that.
Yeah, this
belongs
mine.
To me. But that's not how that works. Once you leave a place, you can keep the memory of it, but the place lives on.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it gets destroyed
in a beautiful, like, collapsing explosion.
The
like
only
this
good
does.
CGI in the whole show.
Ever.
That's it.
This is also cheesy and personal, but it's truth and honesty, which is what I like to put forth on the podcast. Maybe 10 years ago, maybe less than 10 years ago, I went back and visited my childhood home. So for folks at home, I was born in an apartment in Boston and then moved into a city outside of Boston when I was like 2 or 3, and I was there until I was 6.
Yeah.
So it wasn't actually, in the grand scheme of things, that long, but like, I have such a deeply profound relationship to that place that I can like close my eyes and see every single thing in it.
Yeah.
And when I visited, we had family friends who were living there. Mm-hmm. And their kid was like my age when I left.
Wow.
And I cried a lot.
Yeah.
And I went with my mom, and she's like, why are you crying? Like, it's fine. Like, we know these people. Like, there's nothing. They didn't tear it down.
Also, to her, how old was she when she lived there?
Right. Like, she was like in her late 30s or 40s or whatever.
A couple
yeah.
years in your 30s, you don't care.
Yeah. But I'm like, this is like where I like learned so much. Like, this is where the TV was. The Minnie Mouse poster is like faded, but like I can still see like the scratching of our old posters. Like,
yeah,
it was like a really, really intense moment. And so I really understand like where Sheridan is coming from, where he's like, yeah, we don't need this anymore, but like, this was the place.
Yeah,
we did. Like, it's like the dream of like going back to your old high school too. Same thing. We're right. Like, we have attachments to spaces.
Can I read you a poem that relates to this idea?
I think
it's,
you should.
Like, super short.
Yeah.
So, this is a John Ashbery poem called This Room, that when I was leaving the old school that I worked at, the 11th grade literature teacher was leaving at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And so his like last class of the year, he sat down with students and like read this poem with them.
Oh, okay.
Because like a lot of the 11th grade teachers were leaving for various reasons. And the poem is This Room. The room I entered was a dream of this room. Surely all those feet on the sofa were mine. The oval portrait of a dog was me at an early age. Something shimmers, something is hushed up. We had macaroni for lunch every day except Sunday, when a small quail was induced to be served to us. Why do I tell you these things? You are not even here. And just like the spaces that you enter, like, they have so much meaning in them, but they only have that meaning because you remember it. But your remembering it only matters because someone else remembers it too.
Right. It's a collective, like, meaning almost.
And I think Sheridan's feeling the weight of also, like, I'm literally about to die.
Yeah. This is like one of the last things I'm going to see.
And I'm one of the last people who, or I'm one of the people who understands what this place meant.
Right.
And once I die, the understanding of what Babylon 5 meant, part of it is going to die with me.
Yeah.
And like Zach's right here, he'll remember a piece of it. All the other people at the table are going to remember a piece of it. But eventually they're all going to die too. And then we're going to get to the moment in deconstruction where it's a bunch of like hoity-toity academics who are like, was that even a good idea? Was
right.
Babylon 5 even good at all?
God.
And that is
shatters
like
me.
Really sad.
Yeah.
Because also like with you, with that apartment you used to live in, you're the only person who understands how much that place
it's like me and my sister. Yeah.
You and your sister and that's it.
Right.
And nobody else gets it or will ever understand it.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's just set in that stone.
Yeah.
I was looking back because I wanted to see when we did the Gathering commentary.
Yeah.
September 3rd, 2018. Mm-hmm. So a little over a year we've been doing this. And I remember actually watching the beginning of the Gathering, and I know it was like a pan around the Zocalo of like a bunch of men in suits. And I was like, this is like a space I'm going to be in for a while.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I felt it then. And I think Babylon 5 has like really, really nailed the feeling of like Star Trek has like the Enterprise, and like the bridge of the Enterprise is so iconic for a reason. But like, that's a room and like the ship and like what's on the ship. But that's like, I know multiple rooms on Babylon 5 right now.
Yeah.
Like, I know like where people go around. Like, I know the staff. I know it's like, I really feel like I know that place so well.
Yeah.
The way I know like the house I used to live in. So it's just, this is such a beautiful scene. And like, it hits me harder than any character death has. It hits me more than like,
yeah. The lights going off was the most emotional moment of that.
Right.
Episode. Yeah.
The lights going off into, and then we're nuking it. Like, yeah. Because you were like, wait, your brief moment of like, wait, why are they blowing it up? And it's like, of course they're blowing it up. Like,
yeah,
it's occupying, yeah. It's dead space. Like,
even then I was like, oh, they'll just leave it there, right? It's just, you can float around.
They just float. Yeah. And they're like, no, that's really bad for traffic and everything. And they're like, okay, fine, we'll nuke it. And it's like, and it blows up so beautifully. Like, it looks like it's like a cocoon
it, like,
cracking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Whatever, 200 million tons of solid metal.
And it rounds out one more
prophecy.
Prophecy.
Babylon 5 is going to be blown up.
Yeah, Sinclair saw it being blown up.
Oh my
God. It's like,
God.
Yeah, it is, but not for bad reasons.
Once again, I didn't even pick up on that. That's good.
Yeah.
I think every prophecy on the show has come true in some way or another.
I think so, yeah.
Emperor Veer technically happened, although that was our prophecy. And also that happened in the show.
It was
they talked
a
about
real
that.
Prophecy in
but
the
we
show
called
also.
It before that.
True.
Which that just, it's just like narrative sense that happened. But yeah, so he leaves and, you know, Zach is like, do you want to get food? And he's like, I can't.
That broke my heart.
When yeah, Zach, like, come on. He's like, one more meal. Like, come on.
Like, Zach doesn't understand the urgency of this. He doesn't get that Sheridan's dying. He's just like, hey, man, I haven't seen you in, like, 20 years. Can we
get, like, a meal?
I know we weren't friends at all, but, like, let's hang out. Dude.
They're going to nuke the ship. Come on.
And Zach is, like, looking for someone to share this meaning with, too. But, like, his understanding of what Babylon 5 meant is, like, slightly skew from Sheridan.
Yeah.
So, like, even though both of them are in the same space and both of them are feeling this place is going to be blown up, they're feeling it differently enough that they can't connect with each other.
Right.
And isn't that so fucking sad?
It's like the human condition. Like, no matter how much connection we have, we are not on the same. We are not the same person.
Yeah.
Like, we're not the same mind. Zach has been on an empty ship for 20 years. Just like patrolling nothingness,
you
know?
Well, they said that he went home.
Oh, true. No, he went home for on
then
like 6 months ago.
I signed back up so that I could be with him when it got turned
off. Yeah, but still 6 months, he's just like chilling.
Right.
And so he's just like, I know all this place like the back of my head now. And like, you were here long ago. We had all these adventures, right? Like, he has this sort of like nostalgic view of like what the show was. Like, we did stuff here.
Yeah.
And Sheridan's like, no, I have to leave.
Yeah.
And never come back. And I'll never see you again.
Yeah.
He goes where he has to go. He goes where the end of the Shadow War happened. Coriolanus 6. He's like, we're setting a course for the Coriolanus system. And as soon as they pull into hyperspace, He realizes he has hardly any time left. He has Lorian appear and stand next to him. Lorian just beautifully is like, did you think we were done? Like, you thought we are done? You thought we were kidding? You thought we were going to, like, forget about it? Like, no, we didn't forget about you.
Yeah, Sharon's like, can I go back?
And he's like, Lorian's no. Like,
no, you're dead, man. Like,
what did you think?
Yeah.
You don't get one more adventure. This is it.
Yeah.
Right here. Go enjoy it.
Yeah.
Here he goes. And then he looks out the window and he says, turn off all the lights. Turn off, you know, all the sounds and everything. Monitoring everything. Turn the thruster off. And he's like, there, perfect. And he just looks out and it's space.
Yeah.
Another moment that hit very hard.
Yeah.
And then he, like, looks out and then it's a white light. And then he opens his eyes and he sees the white light. And then we cut and they're like, they found a ship a little while later. Didn't find Sheridan. Airlocks are closed. He's gone.
Yeah.
Some people, the Minbari, think he might still come back. But Ivana was like, he won't. Yeah. We know he won't.
So Lorian, like, took him to heaven, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I understand that.
Or whatever space heaven is.
True. Probably, like, Hawaii. It's, like, a nice field trip. Yeah. He gets a nap. No, it's a long nap, because that's all that Sheridan has ever wanted.
I like, in this scene, Lorian adds an extra question.
Right. Who are you?
So he says, who are you? What do you want? Why are you here? And then he says, where are you going?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, oh.
There's the question.
There is somewhere... There is something more. He is going somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where do you think you're going, even? It's like a variant of that question you can think about.
Yeah.
Because, like, who are you is just a fundamental question of identity and, like, what's your space in the world? What's the shadow question again?
What do you want?
What do you want? Right. You know, what's your motivation? What propels you?
Yeah.
Where are you going is, like, what's your trajectory? Like, it's just, like, the entirety of existence boiled down to some questions. Like,
yeah.
Ugh.
There is something interesting about, like, this sort of stages of enlightenment that those questions represent, that who are you and what do you want are kind of the fundamental, maybe they're not even fundamental answers, but they're the first things that you interact with and engage with, of, like, who am I in relation to everything that's around me, and what are the things that I want, but within the context of this kind of mortal existence. And then Lorian adds the question of, why are you here? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, all that stuff, you live in this context, but, like, you should have a reason that you exist in this place. And then at some point you leave the here.
Yeah. You go somewhere.
And you go somewhere.
Where are you going?
Yeah.
It's beautiful stuff. Our final scene is calling back to the moments where he says he wants to watch the sunrise one more time. Yeah. With Delenn, when they say goodbye to each other. And so now
I didn't even think about the light being
He's seeing his last sunrise.
Oh, man.
And Delenn now is sitting, and Ivanova in the final monologue says, like, Delenn, every single day for the rest of her living life, watched the sunrise before she started her day. Dude. Which is a very old people thing to do. I wish I could do it.
Also, Delenn lives for another, like, century.
Yeah, that's even crazier, though.
Yeah.
She lives for 100 years doing that.
That's so sad.
I know. Lots of sunrises where she keeps seeing her late husband right next to her. Yeah. It's super sad, but it's beautiful at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's sort of, you know, the, like, Japanese, I don't think it's actually a myth, but, like, the thing, they based the Futurama episode on it with the dog that waited for its master because he thought it was coming back, and he waited until he died. It's kind of like that, but, like, not as, she's not an animal. Like, she chooses to do it.
Right.
She has that volition. And it's just, it's a nice moment. And yeah. That's where the show ends.
Yeah.
That's where Babylon 5 is done.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap on the series. So I was satisfied with it. And I think this conversation also has helped me, like, crystallize what I think about it overall.
Yeah, I didn't cry when it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I was going to. I think because I hyped myself up into thinking I was going to, I didn't. But it, my feeling watching it was like, yeah, that's right.
That's how you end a show like that.
I think I've just felt so resolved on Babylon 5 for a while now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That it didn't, like, click into, now finally I'm satisfied with the show. I've felt that way long enough and understood how it's going to end for long enough that my experience in this episode alone was not this sort of transcendent, like, oh my god, best thing in the world.
Exactly.
Which is why I'm glad we didn't push it until the end of everything.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have put pressure on it that wouldn't have...
You can't live up to that anymore.
Can't live up to that. But I think it, in our conversation, it evoked certain themes of the show that maybe we haven't talked about quite as much
totally.
As have appeared.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of, like, the placeness of Babylon 5 and what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, overall, I thought it was really, really good.
If anything, I like that it wasn't as, like, it wasn't a perfect finale.
It wasn't bombastic in any way. Yeah.
No, I had a feeling for a while that this last season wouldn't be bombastic because, I mean, the villain of the season is like a villain that does nothing.
Right.
Right. But it's, but what I mean is, like, it's not final in the way that, like, I never want to watch another Babylon 5 thing. Like, it still feels like I'm kind of interested in, like, what this world is up to. And, like,
yeah.
I still want to read that book. And, like, I want to watch Crusade now. Yeah,
maybe,
like,
it also doesn't feel final because we're, like, going to watch
another. Yeah, we have a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Maybe if, because I don't right now have that feeling that I have when after I finish a book or a show where it's like, oh, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Now my life is over.
Right. It's just, I guess I'll die.
Yeah, I just am done now. Which I felt when we finished Farscape
because
that was, like, the last thing.
The end of your first podcast also.
Yeah.
For podcast season.
But I'm not feeling that right now. I think maybe because we're about to watch Crusade.
Unfortunately, we're not going to feel that at the end of Crusade.
No, we'll probably feel like, okay, good.
Okay.
Okay, it's done.
Sweet.
It'll probably be the newsroom feeling of, like, thank God. Yeah, I was just going to say something else, and it totally slipped my mind. Shoot.
I forgot to mention that. Yeah, we forgot to mention that in the first episode. I'm looking at my story notes. In the first episode when Delana Sheridan and Lanier are walking out of B5 for the last time, they're walking by the Zocalo, and they keep cutting to shots of another restaurant next to the Zocalo called Dariel's, and I just love the name Dariel a lot.
Yeah, we've never seen it before.
Yeah, Dariel's rules.
Yeah. I'm not going to remember what I was trying to remember.
Leave it open-ended.
Yeah. Ambiguous.
Yeah.
Ambiguous.
Ambiguous.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's Babylon 5. We're not done yet, folks. Next week on Chatsalon 5,
yep.
What are we doing?
Well, we are going to dive into some of the fun spin-off stuff. Oh, I remember what I was going to say.
Oh, tell me.
You talking about how, like, we wanted to keep living in this world. So much so that immediately after the episode ended, we watched the first, like, 5 minutes of the first episode.
Oh, it was wonderful. Oh, it was wonderful.
And then we watched the scene where Londo and Jakar, like, choke each other out in the Zocalo, like you said.
So good.
I was, like, in that moment ready to just rewatch the whole thing.
Yeah. Right. Midnight on the firing line, by the way.
I was ready to do it. But it starts with that scene of the two random Centauri guys.
No, call Centauri Prime!
Yeah,
no.
What a weird... Yeah.
It's very corny.
Yeah.
On Ragesh 3. Yeah, the fact that B5 is a show... Like, I took a film class in college. My professor, like, always would drill in, like, pay attention to the first and last shot of whatever you watch. And the first shot of B5 is, like, now on Ragesh 3. Like, not related to anything we care about.
Yep.
And then it's, like, Centauri getting owned by Narn. And you're like, wow,
but
that's
sad. But it is, I mean, but that moment is emblematic of probably the main theme of the show. This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, it's an example of it.
Because it's a grudge attack that the Narn, you know, are still mad at the Centauri for invading them. And it represents all of the reasons that peace is hard and not possible.
Exactly.
So in that way it's important. It just looks super cheesy because they also hadn't figured out the Centauri hair.
Yeah,
so
they kind of look like rockers a little. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
You see a young Veer briefly. Like, yeah. Ew.
Oh, that's gross. He looked gross. He looked good, but his hair looked gross.
True. But we're doing a recap next week.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, we're not doing that.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, of course. For sure not.
Yeah, so next week we will, as we always do at the end of a season, we'll do a season 5 recap. And we might also speak to some aspects of the show Babylon 5, just the episodes of Babylon 5.
Yeah, it'll be a season 5 / series
recap. Yeah. So we'll do our normal thing of, like, bucket the episodes, and we might truncate that or do that a little quicker, I think, than usual. And then talk about the show overall, and if you have things that you want to share with us, either in email form, as many people have, or in voicemail, just MP3 format, as other people have, please send those to us. And we will read them or play them on the show.
Yeah.
That'll be next week. And then after that, we'll dive into Call to Arms and Crusade and...
all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, finish out our we'll do the post-game of Battle.
Right. Yeah. You rematch the Elite Four, and then there's, like, a Mewtwo's here. Yeah. Let's get to the plug zone then.
Let's do it. So speaking of emailing us, if you want to get in contact with us, you can email us at chatspod@gmail.com. That's where we take questions, comments, concerns, suggestions for future things. Anything and everything you want to say to us, you can send us there. And you can also, if you would prefer, do that on Twitter at chatspod on twitter.com. Both of those are spelled chatzpod. You can also on Twitter send us like cool gifs and memes and all sorts of other things people do. Rate us on iTunes. You can find us there. Give us 5 stars. That'll help people to find us. It'll help us to feel good. It'll just be nice. If you're going to do 4 stars, even if that's true to you,
live your truth.
Yeah, you can just say it that to us. It doesn't need to live on iTunes. We have a subreddit created by the wonderful Brothers at War. Specifically, Nick, I think, made it. Or did they make Yeah, Nick
I,
made it.
I believe they made it.
Yeah. Anyway. And that's at reddit.com/r/chatspod.
Yep, absolutely check that out. We got they're posting every episode with like their own unique custom titles, and it's they started doing like chats throwbacks, like Throwback Thursday, where they listen to old episodes of Escape Chats and talk about them.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
it's really great.
Fun. Oh, I'll do that with them.
Yeah, so hop in there.
That's very exciting. And if you'd like to support the show to continue its existence, you can head on over to patreon.com/chatspod, where you can back us at one of 3 different levels. So for $1 a month, you get access to commentary chats where Alan and I watch a movie and we do our live commentary of it. For the month of November, we just did Zorro and then we also did Borat. One of those is a cursed file that is you shouldn't listen to, and the other one is a
Borat
fun action romp. Borat is the fun action romp. No. At $3 a month, you can get access to that and Chats Nights, which is the bonus hangout show. And then at $5 a month, you get access to both of those plus pilot chats where we try out new shows that we might want to watch next, which is becoming increasingly relevant as we come nearer and nearer to the end of our Babylon 5 coverage. And recently we met our goal of $75 a month. So we just over the Thanksgiving holiday put out 3 different bonus episodes that are available to all Patreon subscribers. And coming up, we're going to do the 12 days of Chatsmas. So for 12 days starting on Christmas, we'll give you a bunch of other random stuff. So even if you're only backing at $1, when that happens, you'll get access to all of those things.
Yeah.
And then let's bring it out, or close it out rather, with what we always do, with some Chatsums. These are just little recommendations for other non-TV, well, they might be TV, but non-Babylon 5 things that we have been enjoying and we want you to check out. So, Alan, what's your chatsum for this week,
sir? Yeah. This one's interesting because it's the sort of cyclical nature of our fan base, which is that we have listeners who recommend us things, and as a result, I'm now recommending them that. I don't remember exactly who recommended it, but I think one of the brothers, Pat, recommended that we either chats or watch the HBO Watchmen series, which is now 5 episodes into its 8-episode season. It is a sort of sequel slash reimagining to Alan Moore's original comic.
You described it to me, and it sounds buck wild.
It's entirely buck wild. I will say now, when we're recording this, it's 5 episodes, and episode 6 is airing tomorrow on December 1st. It's so... basically, long story short, Magellan's showing me a Babylon 5...
the scene that we just saw.
You're right, exactly.
Orlando and Jakar talking to each other, and I don't like the word that's being used there, so we don't have to say it, but it's fine.
Thank you, Magellan.
Yeah.
So Watchmen, basically, if you've read the original Watchmen, there's a big squid, and now they're talking about race. And that's all I'm going to say, is it's totally a show that's like handling the issues of like race in America. Because basically what they're doing is like, original Watchmen is like... post-Reagan era, like fear, Cold War, nuclear annihilation, all of that stuff. That's like the fear that it's wrapped up in. And Damon Lindelof and company, the guy who, you know, co-created Lost, was like, okay, what's the modern day like thing everyone's afraid of? And it was like, yeah, like race conflict coming to a boil, like is the thing that people are afraid of. It's like, this stuff is going to keep getting worse to what end? And so they're answering that question. It's really sloppy at the same time, but it's also fun as hell and has that like Damon Lindelof, J.J. Abramsy like mystery box-ishness to it that I think people who are fans of like long-term storytelling will really come to enjoy. And if you don't like it at first, the show like gets progressively better too.
Yeah.
So check it out if you have HBO or if you're on someone else's HBO account, Watchmen. Well, it's a good show. But John, what about you?
Sorry, I'm looking at...
I'm just like looking at memes. Can you believe it?
No, I'm looking at this Throw Chats Thursdays, which has a Z in the middle of third. Like, oh man, when people come up with stuff that is in your voice, but you didn't voice it, it's very satisfying. Yeah. Also, escape chats didn't sound good. So when I re-listen to these, it's going to be upsetting.
It makes me, as an editor, as the editor of those, it makes me very sad.
But I like that people are going to discover, there are people commenting on the translator microbe stuff that I complained about every single episode of escape chats, and I feel like they're gonna get annoyed.
It's exactly like when people read the Book of Jakar and he's like, "Ooh, I was shitty back then."
No, I've changed my mind, I'm a different person.
We made Joe Biden jokes on Freaks Chats. Oh no.
Yeah, exactly. But that's pretty fun stuff. So yeah, my chats for this time around, I've been getting into board games. I can't remember, I think I did another board game recently. But this one I bought because I was in town for Thanksgiving, and it's like a cooperative slash competitive game that I wanted to try with my pals. It's a game called Betrayal at House on the Hill. It's been out for a few years now, so if you are into board games, you probably already know about it and have sort of made your choice about it. But essentially, the gist of it is that you are explorers, sort of horror movie stereotype explorers who are going through a haunted house. And as you discover different rooms, you will run into some spooky stuff. And if you're not a fan of spooky behavior, then maybe you don't want to do this game. Mm-hmm. But you run into spooky stuff, you collect items, events happen to you. And then at some point, something triggers what's called the haunt. And then now all of a sudden, you're in a monster movie or a horror movie. And there are 50 different haunts in the game, so every time you play it, a different thing happens. And the moment that happens is so interesting. I'm going to spoil one of the haunts for people, because I want to just explain how it works. So when we were playing, it was you, me, Jim, and my mom, my brother, my sister. And the moment that the haunt is triggered, it tells you who is the traitor. And they take like a separate rule book and go into the other room to learn all the things that the monster that they control can do.
It's cute!
And then all of you stay in the room, and you're like, okay, this is how we kill the thing, and we gotta do this.
And he comes back, and he's like, hey guys, it's me, the monster.
So the moment we had was, we read the thing that said that now there's like a tentacled horror in the house that has all these tentacles in all these different rooms.
Yeah.
And then my brother was he became the traitor. He comes back in the room and he's like, okay, so my character's dead. They got eaten by the monster, and I can set up tentacles here, 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 here. And then he very slowly kept grabbing us with the tentacles and dragging us to where he could kill us, and we would escape briefly, and then he caught us again. And on some level, it was a miserable experience because we died slowly. But on some level, that is exactly what that movie is like for the characters that live in it.
Right.
So there's, you know, there are aspects of the game that I think make it, certain things are left up to chance that can get kind of frustrating, or kind of like, okay, it's hard to build a strategy. But if you're looking for the experience of like a board game that models a horror movie pretty well and has a decent amount of surprise and variability and replayability to it, I think Betrayal at House on the Hill is a good choice.
Yeah.
There's also a Dungeons and Dragons world version called Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, that it's the same thing, but you can like find a dragon or find Dungeons and Dragons monsters and stuff. There's also a legacy version of Betrayal at House on the Hill that I was looking at.
Yeah.
Where, like, your characters are
persists
members,
between them.
Your characters are members of like families. And every time you play, you pick like, okay, now I'm playing the descendant of this character that I played last time or something.
Yeah, it looks awesome. Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, that's my recommendation.
Board games. Thank you guys so much, as always, for listening to this episode of Chats on 5. Thanks to Magellan for being the rock to my hard place.
Thanks for rock to being my Alan to the Alan.
And thanks for listening to this episode of Chats on 5. Peace.